Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there! Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey everybody, welcome. It is May 16, 2022, in case you didn't know. Like, hello. But welcome to Big Blend Radio's Toast to the Art Show. We are airing live from Bend, Oregon, where we can see mountains with snow on the peak.
Yes.
We were in Eugene, Oregon just a couple days ago, and, you know, beautiful garden and lots of rain, but that's what makes the garden. And now we're in sunshine in like the high desert of Oregon. Who knew Oregon had a desert? It does. They have a lot of lava out here, too. It's beautiful. Nancy and I are hanging out with two sweet kitty cats. We've got two guinea pigs, a few fish indoors and outdoors, and a chicken. So, you know, this is your host. We are your hosts, I should say. Nancy and Lisa, the crazy mother-daughter travel team and publishers of Big Blend magazines. And, you know, as we travel across the country full-time, we document parks, public lands, but we also pet sit. So, you may hear a cat or a guinea pig or a chicken. You never know what's going to happen, or a dog. So, you know, that's how it rolls. So keep up with us at BigBlendMagazines.com. Today we are super, super excited to welcome an actor. Should we say actor or actress? We'll find out. We have Michelle Tomlinson joining us. She is from northern New Mexico, a place that is near and dear to our hearts. She's an award-winning actor, director, acting coach. We have a lot to talk about. She also likes animals like we do. She's a vegan. Yes, we got a lot to talk about. So welcome, Michelle. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. How are you? I've never had anybody introduce me as a vegan before. That's really exciting.
It's on your Instagram because, I think that's interesting because it's like, okay, like, you know, more and more people, I was vegan for quite a few years and then, like, I can't eat nuts, peanuts anymore. So how do I get my protein, right? So it's
right.
Kind of like,
I like to use the blood of non-vegans for my protein resource.
This is great. I like that. So where are you stocking them?
Oh, wow.
Where am I what? I'm sorry.
Where are you stocking them down to get them?
Yeah.
The blood of non-vegans.
They grow a plenty.
But this is about it, right? Like you can't. You know, it's like, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't, you know, it's like this whole protein thing. I mean, we eat a lot of beans, and that means that we have our own fuel.
But then check it out. Maybe vampires only suck the blood of meat eaters. Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Aha. You see,
aha.
It's protection all around. It's longevity, really.
I want to go to this because vegan, you know, people think vegan, oh, you're going to be, you know, I went vegan to clean my body out because when we moved back home to the States, we were living in Kenya in South Africa and then everything was fine. But when we moved to Kenya as a little child, I was very sick. I had all these allergies to all kinds of things.
Everything.
And when I got to Kenya, within 2 weeks, all the allergies went away. Food allergies, everything. Went to England, the allergies came back. Went to South Africa, the allergies went away. And then came to the States, and I'm like, here it comes again. So I went vegan to kind of figure out what is going on. But I actually was very, very healthy. However, I was vegan and then started getting lazy on cooking and how to do the right foods and started eating all the processed soy stuff and got sick. So that wasn't good.
That's so toxic. That soy is so much more toxic than people think.
I didn't realize that.
Wow.
This was in the 90s, like 90s, early, late 90s and early 2000s. Like I got, you know, I was doing so good. And like people, you know, it's like, yeah, my muscles had actual shape to them, you know, it's like, but, then I got stupidly lazy and that was dumb.
She's
and,
a bald muscle woman.
Yeah. So what led you to become
there's
a vegan?
There's worse things.
Well, we're going to talk about acting, I swear, but what led you to become vegan?
And my documentary, got to talk about that.
I really want to talk about the documentary
actually,
Edge, by the way. Yes. Big time.
Thank you. Yeah. I, I was a vegetarian for a very, very long time. And when I was actually 12, I tried to be a vegetarian. But growing up in northern New Mexico at that time of being 12, which was a lot of yesterdays ago, it was not something that was supported. Like, literally the only thing I could possibly think to eat would be beans. And I got so anemic and I passed out and, you know, all the things happened. And so, you know, because I didn't know what I was doing and there was just zero information on it at that time. And so after graduating college and I moved to LA and I discovered the world of more food than what New Mexico, like northern New Mexico, had to offer, suddenly the world opened up. And I became a vegetarian really quickly. And then I, too, ate way too much soy, and I now have a soy allergy. But then I got cancer in 2013. And that really made me start to reevaluate whether I was being even a healthy vegetarian, you know? And after I had cancer and really kind of like changed my diet more, but I still was like eating cheese and eggs at that point for the protein thing and blah, blah, blah. But then I had a child. I birthed my sweet little daughter.
Awesome.
She stopped eating eggs when she was a baby. She would, like, didn't matter who cooked them, how they were cooked, where they were cooked. Like, it did not matter. She was just done. I was like, all right, cool. I guess I'm done with eggs. And then she became super duper lactose intolerant.
Oh, you're right.
And
mm-hmm.
I was like, screw it. I'm done with milk too. And so she was actually the exact point in when I went fully, fully vegan. Because I was hanging on to cheese and eggs. Why? I don't know. I think about it now and it's kind of, cheese and eggs are just kind of gag me now. But hope was, you know, the reason I kind of went fully vegan and then have just really focused as much as I can on raising a really nutrition-based little girl. She doesn't, she's never had a Cheez-It or whatever they're called, those square orange things.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, because it's,
I have a Cheeto that's been in the car for 3 years, and it hasn't changed shape.
3 years.
I did it with a McDonald's French fry once.
Yeah.
And then I had to take it out of the
car.
They
don't change.
They don't change.
No.
Yeah.
There's no mold. There's nothing.
No.
And some of the
ice cream what is
things,
it? You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a friend who went to an ice cream thing. Somebody dumped the ice cream from the ice cream shop. The little swirly whirly things. Dumped it in the trash can, couldn't finish it, and it didn't melt in the hot. And this was in New Mexico, by the way, the hot New Mexico sun. It didn't melt. What is that?
What is in the food? And that's part of the thing, you know, for me is like what is in the food?
Here comes your next documentary. Here comes your next documentary.
Well,
I'm just saying.
Okay. when Lisa couldn't drink milk, I got goats and I learned to milk them. But I was milking them the American way. When we went to Africa, I saw how they milk goats, which is the right way, much more efficient. But she did okay on goat's milk, but not permanently. And goat's milk was very hard to get. So, and then we became the argument of pasteurized, unpasteurized, and I'm like, I give up, you know, just drink water or something.
Yeah.
You know, because is milk really the be-all, end-all?
It's weird.
It is if you're a cow.
Yeah,
you know,
you know
when
what?
You're
we're
a
not
cow,
supposed
it is.
To.
They're
you're
the
not
ones
even
who
supposed...
are supposed to be drinking the milk.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you're not supposed to give cats milk, by the way. People, stop it. You're not supposed to do it. If you're doing
I
it, stop it. Stop
it's
it. You're
amazing.
Not supposed to. I remember as a kid, Nancy, we had these little oatmeal packets. I remember we'd go on safari drives and stuff so early in the morning and just get these little packets open. And I remember cinnamon was my favorite. And I don't like oatmeal when they put all the creamy stuff. It's like, gag me with a spoon. But then if you just put hot water instead of milk, I'm like, this is cool. I can do this.
It's good.
Oh, yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, no,
it's
totally
really,
fine with hot water.
Yeah, because
yeah.
oatmeal creates its own milk. I mean, we have oat milk now, right? But this is very interesting because being in acting, directing, you have to have your energy up. I can only imagine the hours that goes into it. So being vegan, so now, you know, the conversation's gone this way now. So being vegan, Are you, because I look at athletes now, a lot of athletes have turned to becoming, being vegan. Is that the same for you in directing and acting and keeping your energy up and focus up? Because people think, oh, you've got it, you know, you're just eating carrots. It's way beyond that. I mean,
totally beyond that. And it's about the nutrition that's in your food. You know, like today, for example, I made Hope and Me like baked potatoes that were loaded with sautéed, and I sauté a lot of times in water and spices versus like a gallon of oil, you know?
Yeah.
But it had like onion and spinach and carrots and avocado, a little bit of like plain yogurt, and microgreens were inside the baked potato. You know, it's kind of a riff off of the medical medium. Ooh. Anthony Williams has this has a series of books about food and healing yourself through food and all this stuff. And sometimes I try to pull out recipes from his book because they're just so delicious. And that was one of them. But, you know, so you had, and it's supposed to have beans on it, but whatever, you know, I just forgot. So it just had all these other vegetables involved on it. But when you look at, like, the nutritional content of what you're eating, and, like, something may have a lot of this or that and caloric intake or whatever, but what's the nutritional content of the food?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can be a vegan and just be eating peanut butter on top of noodles every day.
You could
and
be
that's still technically
pasta.
Vegan.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Still technically vegan. But it's a processed food. And so I try really hard, and I'm not at all perfect by any means. I just try hard to stray from a lot of the processed foods. I love a good Beyond Burger occasionally because they're freaking delicious. Their sausage is delicious.
You
I can't
sausage.
Help it. It's so
about sausage
good.
Day.
Yeah, we need a good vegan sausage. Does anybody, how
Beyond
do you
make
Meat.
It? Beyond okay. Meat. Well, Beyond Meat is the one that's like processed, right? But it's delicious. But there's recipes out there that you can make sausage that are delicious. I think
Beyond
so.
Meat.
Mostly. I don't know. I read the ingredients a long time ago, and I was like, you know, if I just squint my eyes and turn my head to the left, it's fine. It's fine. It's vegan.
You
it's
gotta,
delicious.
You can't,
I just want to
have
this.
You can't live on it. It just can't. You cannot say that's your main thing.
No.
That's like a treat. You know what I mean? It's like
it is.
Vegan treat.
Absolutely.
And that's how you look at it. Yeah, because that when I was just cooking and doing my own thing, I was healthy. But I also drank a lot of wine too, and I when I was vegan, like I could not drink the amount of wine I could drink now, and that's the thing too. You cannot, no, you can't, because your body's super healthy and clean. Your body is clean, and it's attuned and very awake and aware. Your brain is functioning at a place. I don't know. It's just a really cool thing. And so did that help you with the cancer side of life and going through that, being vegan? Do you think that helped?
I think so. And I think it's helped me stay, like, remain cancer-free. And it's really helped me be just more mindful about my body. Like, I don't drink alcohol at all.
Well, we're taking
more care than
of the
fine.
Wine for you.
You do it, kill it for me. You know, so I feel good. I still catch colds. So does everybody else. Vegans are not above anybody. We're not better than anybody, but in my body, I do technically, typically, usually feel good.
Well, that's
and I don't have it. I just finished getting over a humongous sinus infection, so I say it with kind of a smile on my face right now. Like, I feel so much better. Like, pardon me.
Yeah,
no,
but it's spring. Spring is like that, though. Spring will get all of
it. Yeah, it's
you've been getting it. All
you know,
the pollen in the Pacific Northwest has been around, like cherry blossom trees. Everybody's blooming, and we're going, it's so beautiful, but you're killing me.
Yeah,
but it's also
exactly. It's gorgeous.
It's monoculture.
Yeah.
That's where the allergies come from, these big fields of everything's the same. So where you might have, before monoculture, you would get little bits of this and that and not become an allergy. You might sneeze over something. But now, because of monoculture, if you drive through something that you have now become allergic to, the fields, especially in certain parts of Arizona, Wow.
Yeah.
Man, it can be really debilitating because of the monoculture. And I get that we have to do it, so don't email me about it. I understand the economics. I get it.
But the economics of your health don't add up.
No.
I'm just saying.
But
they don't. I want to go to your roots in New Mexico. So, you know, northern New Mexico. So whereabouts in northern New Mexico are you from?
I was born in Santa Fe and raised in Los Alamos.
Okay. Oh, yeah. The Manhattan Project land.
I know.
Yeah.
I used to have to tell people that I didn't glow in the dark. You know, Los Alamos doesn't really have the best reputation for all the radiation in the land and the radiation barrels that got buried in the 40s and leached out into, like, you know, every pueblo close to Los Alamos, all of the Native American pueblos and the land. It continues to create pretty serious issues today, even because, you know, radiation doesn't just turn off and it doesn't stop because it's like, well, this is where the fence is, so it's okay on the other side of this fence. You know, like, that's not a thing.
Oh, I know.
So I grew up having to, like,
yeah,
exactly. Oh, my God, exactly. Yeah, it was for a smart place, it's lacking in wisdom. But yeah, it's beautiful because the Jemez is right there. You know, I grew up going in the mountains all the time. And so I really am a mountain loving person by nature of who I am. And so, we were just always in the mountains,
You know,
walking
Santa
in
Fe,
rivers and hiking.
Santa Fe is awesome. We were there a couple of years ago at the beginning of the pandemic, right? Or was it before the pandemic? No, it was before the pandemic. Right, with 2019, we were in Santa Fe. Yeah, right before. And we did the downtown. We stayed at La Fonda, and amazing. The governor's in. And we stayed around, did our tourism thing, did a walking tour of Santa Fe, and a food tour. That was fun.
Right.
But it just, the merging of cultures in Santa Fe was so amazing to me. And how the arts were just so prominent, and how a community puts the arts at the forefront, all of them, not just visual arts, music.
Yes.
All of them.
Yes.
It was just so amazing. And then going out to Bandelier, and I know we've actually interviewed some people from the San Ildefonso Pueblo, and I'm getting to that.
Oh, yeah.
I really want to talk about Edge. Because we've done so many shows on Native American culture with different tribal representatives who we've talked about this, about the language and how everyone's trying to document the language right now.
That's
we're in Oregon right now, but even we were just in the Redwoods area and they were talking about, like, we've got to get this down. We were in Louisiana a couple of years ago in Natchitoches at a folk festival, and there was a lady in their tribe that's only 600 people left in their tribe. And she gets basket weaving, and, you know, I couldn't even interview her because of the sound. You know, it was so loud in this place. And you know, it was also just kind of rude in a way to, like, start recording her. You know, it was like, and she was just talking about, like, they don't have their language, and they're trying. Her father created the alphabet for her tribe. And it's out. It was, like, left by the Congress, and it's in the Library of Congress and everything. Her father wrote the alphabet so that it could actually become their language and documented. But this is a tribe of 600 people. This is crazy, right? So Edge, I was watching the trailer of the documentary. Tell us about this, because it really does get into this specifics of, you know, and I look at how the world in this, like, our country is divided, and people are moving, and it's now or never, right, to save these languages.
Yeah.
And the stories. It's not just saving the language. If you don't save the language, you don't save the stories, right?
It's as I've learned. And I still feel like I have about, I don't know, if you could fill the bottom of the Grand Canyon and maybe take that all the way to the moon, I feel like that's how much I have left to learn about all things Native American culture. Because there's so many cultures, right? We can say Native American culture with no S and make it a singular thing. But the truth is there's so many Native American cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And with that is all of these different languages that not that long ago, you know, a lot of people like to pretend it was so long ago in ancient history, you know, back when dinosaurs were on the earth, is when all these bad things happened in the Americas, and it wasn't that long ago, you know, that these people were murdered for speaking their language, for just living within their culture, being different, right, that assimilation, the need for the civilization, quote unquote, and the assimilation, it's a really gross history, and I'm really passionate about trying to shed as much light as I humanly can on the truth, whatever piece of truth that I can shine light on, because it's much bigger than me or you or my daughter or anybody, you know, it's much larger. But Edge came around when I was having a conversation with a gentleman named James Mountain. He's San Ildefonso. He's the former governor of San Ildefonso. And he said something about his language dying. And this is, we first had this conversation, I think it was about 5 years ago. And I was like, what do you mean your language dying? Me being an English-speaking white woman in America, I had, what in the hell am I going to know about that? And he goes, well, language is a living thing. And then we sat there and talked for probably a couple hours, and I was blown away by just the enormity of what he was facing and talking about the dwindling number of elders at San Ildefonso and what it would mean if, you know, the Tewa language actually died, and just everything he started talking about. And I was like, dude, I think this needs to be a documentary. I think this actually needs to turn into a film and see what, you know, if we can engage an audience in this on a new level, on a different level. And that was when the seed of Edge was planted.
You know, I think today people really, especially because of certain television shows, really want to know their heritage, where they came from. And they want to go past their grandfathers and grandmothers and great-grandfathers, great-grandmothers. They want to go past. They want to know, like, you know, did I come from Christopher Columbus, or did I come from, you know, whoever? And and what has it shaped my personality or my talents? Did I get this talent from this person or that person? They really want to know. Basically, want to know who you are. And and part of finding out who you are is to know your family history. It's a big part. And you may not like your family history, or you might think you don't want to know your family history because you suspect there might be parts that aren't so good to read. But it's not about, it's about how you choose to use what you were handed. It's not about what you were handed. It's about how you choose to use what you were handed. So you are handed probably, if you could put it on a plate of food, half good, half bad, maybe. I don't know. I'm just trying to be equally fair. Use the good, use the bad, whatever. It's up to you as an individual. But I think there is this thing where we really want to know, especially in this country, because we're such a mixed bag, is who we came from, who are we? Well, because other countries, like if you go to Italy, do you really see more than Italians? Yeah, but not like this country.
Well, in the Native American culture, they got moved around, they got their hair cut off. Please, let's brainwash you into something else and move you away from all your roots. I mean, we've done shows where, like, we've done to folks that were moved from Nebraska to Oklahoma into reservations, and they took their corn with them. Their corn would not grow in Oklahoma. And then this museum in Nebraska said, here, we're going to, this was where your land once was. We're going to let you plant the corn and let's see if it grows. It grew.
Yeah.
It grew in Nebraska where it was from.
Well, the corn knows where it wants to grow.
Yeah. But for Native Americans, it's like they're attached to the land. You know, we talk about veganism and stuff. Like, hello, it's about what are we doing to the land and nature, and Native Americans have that. And I think it's so important that their lessons are, you know, their lessons, their stories are documented in ways. It's so important, you know, in every shape and form that language gets documented. So, looking at this, you know, Michelle, with the film, are you sharing the story of the language? Are you able to, what part of the documentary, because, you know, we understand the need for sure. But what is happening to actually, like I was talking about the one lady, her dad actually documented the alphabet. And that's a whole, I mean, then you, what do you do with the alphabet, right? You know, because they have different words and things, you know. So from there, what's happening with the language? Are you documenting the goes from there?
I don't feel like I have any business documenting anybody else's language.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, as far as like me being like somehow recording it or trying to save somebody's language. What I'm really working with is, and I'm working with my co-producing partner, Lori Bowen, who's insanely brilliant, wonderful woman. And what we've set out is to inform and inspire.
Mm-hmm.
And I especially want to inform the non-native humans about this ever-growing issue and inspire support. And if I can at all, if we have the ability to at all inspire any Native youth to maybe, if they see this film, to maybe try to start learning their language or becoming more fluent in it, if that inspiration happens, then I will, oh my gosh, I'll do backflips. Like, it would be really exciting if it could have an impact like that. But I also really want to inform the non-Native people. About the importance of supporting Native American cultures, which obviously is exactly into their language. And as I understand it, Native languages are a spoken thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's spoken.
Absolutely.
They're, you know, and when we start talking about how do we save, how do we preserve, what is a thing, an answer a lot of the time is to ask your elders. There's asking elders. And the film talks about the issue, talks about how the issue of losing languages affects cultures and everybody in the earth and our relationship with the earth and the spiritual relationship with everything. And offers solutions. So it actually has a really solid beginning, middle, and end story-wise. And James Mountain is the person that we've highlighted the most in the film, as he was the one who inspired the entire
thing.
He's
a former
you know?
of the tribe, right?
You know, yeah, Samuel DeFonso. Mm-hmm.
The language of a culture, I mean, the culture and the language is the same thing. When you shift to another language, like when, since we spent so much time in parts of Africa, when the British came over and everybody now needed to go to missionary school and speak English, there is no way that the teaching them English didn't in some way impact their own culture. Because how English was taught at that time, mostly through churches, was you will not speak your native language in this building. You will not this, you will not that, you will not that. Instead of let's be bilingual, like why don't you learn the native language? And a lot of people did. But there's words. We all know if you travel, you know, there's words in different languages that you can never replace with English. You can't. It just doesn't mean the same thing because it doesn't have the cultural background.
And that's why the Bible
that's
is
also
such
discussed in
a
the
mess.
Film.
Yeah.
People
cool.
Saying, everybody reads the Bible in a different language. I'm just saying, you know. No, it's so funny. But you know, but this I love what you're doing with, so Edge, so you, right now you're in the production part. Tell us a little bit when people can see it. Where, what, and how?
We're
when?
Currently in post. Yeah, we're in post right now. We've shot it, and we have some beautiful B-roll in there. It's my editor is a guy named Alex Simon, who I've worked with many times over the last several years, and he's been editing it, and we are 14 minutes into the next cut. We'll have picture lock by August, and we're looking for finishing funds. We're poking around for finishing funds because it is a documentary, and those one of the biggest reasons they do take a long time is totally money. We have to pay the people to do the things, you know, paying editors and cinematographers and sound people. And
absolutely.
I have an amazing composer attached to it to help with composing a little bit of music to it.
Cool.
My friend Harry Manfredini, he's epic. And, you know, post sound and stuff. And it's 99.9% of it has all happened in New Mexico.
Oh,
which
is
great.
Awesome.
Like all the shooting. I really wanted, because I, you know, for me, it's going home. And for me, it's being able to go home and give back, you know, and give back in a way that can have a positive impact, which is,
isn't that cool?
Which is really like, important.
That full circle, that's kind of, I think there's a point in a career where you go home. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There is a point in a career where you go, you do that full circle turn. And to give back is important. And how does that make you feel as an, I want to talk, did we say actor or actress? We'll get to that. But like as an actor, no, seriously, I think when you have to say actress, we have to put on a tutu. But, you know.
I know, same.
But you can wear a leather jacket and a tutu, right? But going back home, like there is that circle back. And I think it's with every career. Where you just kind of somehow the world just conspires that it happens for everybody in some way.
I agree.
Yeah.
Home always calls you back. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
And I'm definitely feeling the love of
green
you know
chilies.
Possibly making New Mexico. Oh my God, yes, making New Mexico home again. You know, it'll be in a new way, it'll be in a different way. You know, because you can't really go home again. But I am really considering that being the next location, like the next place we live. I'm attached to direct a couple of features. So and they are, everything is shooting in New Mexico that I'm attached to, director-wise. So
but look at it.
It just kind of makes
film
sense.
Film history is huge. The film history is massive in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
When we were in that 2019 trip, we stayed in Gallup. And a friend of ours, family, owns a motel there that's very famous for being home of all the movie stars when they filmed.
El Rancho.
El Rancho. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hello,
that's
Tanya
it. I know
Ortega.
What you're talking about.
Do you know the Ortegas? You're going to know them, probably. Tanya Ortega. And she runs the nonprofit, the National Parks Arts Foundation. And she's like, if you go to New Mexico, because she does a artist residencies, you should do it where artists, and no matter if it's filmmaking, pottery, painting, dancing, singing, it doesn't matter,
amazing, whatever,
you stay in a national park for a month. And so one of the artist residencies is Chaco and then Aztec Ruins, done Fort Union. And so we've gone to some of these parks, we've interviewed all the artists every first Friday. That's what we do, everyone. Listen to our show every first Friday. We interview artists on in these residencies, but Northern New Mexico has been a huge part of it. And so we stayed at El Rancho, and we went to the Native American dances that happened in the summer, and that was pretty magical to really experienced that and went up to Chaco. And, you know, I don't know. There's just and then when we did Santa Fe and we went to Bandelier, which is really close to – isn't that right, the Pueblo that you're talking about, or Santa del Falco?
Yeah, Jemez is right there.
Right there.
Santa del Falco. I mean,
right.
there's so many that are all – I mean,
it's all,
Albuquerque
that's,
and north.
Is it 19,
yeah.
19 – as I recall,
19
like 19
Pueblos.
19 Pueblos mm-hmm. all throughout that area.
Yeah.
And when you go there, it is so humbling. You just realize how, like, I don't know, it's the closest I can get to Africa where
exactly.
people are so connected to the earth. There's nothing like it. And it just was,
it's,
I felt
it's, yeah,
home,
it's home
there. It is home
yeah,
there.
It is home.
It is home. And when you go to these pueblos, like in Bandelier, and you realize how people were living, like Gila Cliff dwellings in Silver City, too, like that's, it's just, it's like, how could you do that to people? Like, I just want to go, they created this existence.
Right.
It's already really hard. You know, you're going to live in these cliff dwellings way up high, and then you're going to go, you know, grow your corn down or up, depending on where. And up and down you go. This was like survival was life, right? Yet they had this, like, I don't know, like this life with nature. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. You know, you live, you when you go in these cliff dwellings inside and you look at their view, like,
dude,
don't put a condo in it because you lose the natural connection.
Right.
It just is. And I think Santa Fe's done a good job of keeping its authenticity of, you know, its plaza and the
It's not been without a lot of trials and tribulations.
And fight, right?
Yeah,
I bet.
Like, where the governor's palace is, where the artists are selling you know, their jewelry and their pottery and everything. They're on the sidewalk. They had to fight to be able to stay on that space. And
that's
all the
it.
People inside
really?
The plaza square itself
the palace
are not
area, right?
But it's not the and it's not the same. You're not getting the same. I don't know how to say this without sounding hideous. You're not getting the same quality of art.
What's
somebody's
yeah,
going to
no,
burn
it,
me for
it,
this?
It's
inside
not what the marketplace
that.
Used to be. It's not the authentic
right.
marketplace it used to be.
But it,
when
it
we
still
went there,
is where the governor's where the governor's palace is, it still is. But they had to fight. The pueblos had everybody had to fight to be able to stay on that sidewalk because so many other people like let's pretend I was like oh I should be on that sidewalk and I'm going to sell some stuff. Well, I can't. Because I'm not Native American and I have no right to be selling on that
exactly.
sidewalk. They had to fight to keep that going, and I respect that so much that stretch of sidewalk on the plaza in Santa Fe is one of the only places I will shop for jewelry.
Oh, well,
because that's
we
how much
there.
I actually
we
respect
went,
what they had to go
is,
through.
They're real, and when well, okay, I'm just gonna say we were kind of naive when we went in there, and we were in the plaza, and I've got to try to be politically correct here, and so I'm trying. Okay, how do
just
I say this
it,
without getting everybody in trouble? But anyway, no matter what,
where you point your camera.
Yes, I was like told to go photograph there, and I did, and it really lands on my shoulders. I freaking know better. You know, we filmed in Africa and everything, you know, it's like you never just photograph people. And I'm
you
really one of those people, I always photograph the back of people, not the front, unless I talk to them. And I don't even want to talk to people. I mean, we do on radio shows, that's our thing, but we're hidden. So I don't like Zoom video things, and we still have to do it. But, you know, I'm shy, believe it or not. But it's like, okay, here's all these, you know, people. And it didn't make sense to me when I went there. And, of course, I photographed and got in trouble. Like, didn't get in trouble.
Yeah.
The lady said, you should ask permission. I was like, you are so freaking right. I'm
absolutely
such an asshole.
Right.
I'm like, I'm an asshole. I'm
way
so sorry.
Way to own it, though.
So I turned around and I deleted everything and showed her. I deleted everything.
Good.
She says, all you had to do is ask, and you didn't need to delete. I'm like, no, I did. This was wrong, and I'm stupid, you know. And I deleted it, and I was like, what the hell? I turned into that typical American brain of just, no offense, American friends and family, but there's this, I became the ugly American tourist, right? I grew up living in different tribes in Africa. I mean, yeah. I grew
and
up
we
with
saw
this.
This.
You know,
we saw
what
people
the hell?
Pointing
the
cameras in people's faces and never thinking once.
Yeah,
that they
it's
should
not
ask
a zoo,
permission.
People. It's not a zoo, but yeah. I did it, and I was like, "What the hell?" Just because your little piece of paper says go, do like, no, and I was so guilty, I didn't even want to say this today, but I have to because I was the stupid one, and she looked at me, I went, "Oh my God, I suck." I fell into that stupidity trap, but I didn't understand it really the way that, you know, the Palace of Governors, this strip outside a building.
Yeah.
To me, I didn't understand it. Like what was going
you
on?
You don't
here
know until you know, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
you know,
you just don't know until you know. And that's the thing. And I can't tell you how many times to use your phrase, I've been the stupid one. So recently I've been the stupid one in all of the sense. And all we can do when we are the stupid ones is learn from it and own it and go, okay, wow, holy crap, this was not
You're
my
so
best
much
moment
more
and
polite
I
than
didn't
me.
I didn't know and yeah. that, well I'm like I don't know what I can say so I you know it's really just ownership I think my
yeah,
personal
you,
perspective
you have to take
is just
ownership of what
ownership
you've
because
yeah
you
and
can't
you
what are you gonna pass it on to somebody else like oh
well
yeah. It's not my fault I didn't know this thing it's like oh my God I'm sorry but I didn't know this thing and now I'm not gonna forget this thing.
Deep down you do and when you're filming you're in a mode of filming that you just you are in that mode of filming that honestly you do not think that way. You're filming. I remember somebody took a photo of me way back when we first got to this country. Nancy and I taught musical organ teaching people how to play musical organs, musical teaching. I don't know. Whenever I say we taught people how to play with their organ, it sounds
Oh boy. Here we go.
So anyway, we landed in Florida and Nancy had a magazine in South Africa and we're like, we'll never do that. And I worked for her as a kid, you know, all that. And we're like, we're never doing that again. It's so hard. Well, look at it, you know, 25 years later here in this country. But in the meantime, we were teaching people how to play, you know, we were both musicians teaching them how to play organs in this company in malls. So they were selling the organs. And anyway, I went outside and back in the day, I used to smoke. Sorry, people. Yes. And it was quite fun. But don't do it. I haven't done it for years. But here I was at the entrance of the mall. They had this ficus tree or whatever, big old plant. It's like behind the ficus, you know, it's like between the two ferns. Here I was outside the mall smoking a cigarette, like just in between breaks. Like no one's going to smell that. Some guy came running up and took my photo and ran. And I was like, what the hell was that? And my sales manager was with me, Tim. And we chased him, and I'm like, and I'm fresh from Africa. I'm gonna tackle you, dude. I'm gonna take you down. You
right.
Because when we left South Africa, like stuff was going, and you know, it's like,
yeah.
And he just said,
let's
no,
say it got
you
physical.
Look. I ran after him. And he goes, I'm sorry, it was just a cool. I'm doing this photo project, and he goes, you just look so like you shouldn't be smoking, which was exactly true, and the picture was perfect for what he was doing. You know, this, you know, you shouldn't
yeah,
be doing
you know,
it like a sin.
The proper way would be to stand there, I took your photo, and explain. I understand
but,
I'm telling you before
but he
the
didn't.
Photo.
He ran, and it was weird to me. I freaked out. Like, I'm like, that's creepy. And so I was like,
it's
whatever.
Creepy.
And he's like, I have the photo, and I have the right, and it's a public place, which he's right. It's in a public place. But that feeling, and so that day, that was exactly when I photographed them. I did delete it, and I do actually have photos where they were approved and everything. But they that feeling of what it must feel like to them sitting there. Here's my jewelry. This is an art, you know. And yeah, it's changed over the years, of course. You know, at the more they don't get to have what they need and respect and placement, right? It's going to change of who comes in Santa Fe. But that day was a lesson, and it was something I really understood. Like, I've been on the other side of that in some way.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not a zoo, and neither are these people. These are people making a living, and they're not animals in a zoo, and we shouldn't be putting animals in zoos either. So just saying. So I really So it's interesting about that. You understand that when filming, you're in that zone. Like, you just don't even. I think we get into a crazy zone. I wasn't doing it as a tourist. You know what I mean? It was just, I was doing my job and totally forgot that side, and I was stupid at it. But I think there's something to be said for the film industry, too, to be aware of their surroundings, of what you're doing. Do you feel that as a director and filmmaker, even actor, like your location, like if you go in location, like in Joshua Tree, they painted over, some filmmakers painted over the petroglyphs of the ancient ones because they thought it would look better. Yeah. In Joshua Tree National Park.
They actually physically painted
over them. They thought they could make them look better in their film.
Yeah.
Look better. Look
I know, right? And how can you make them better?
Actually, yeah. There.
You have Photoshop to make them come out.
It would show
them
better on camera.
So they avoid them.
Let's just say they've refreshed them with modern paints. It's horrific. I mean, it's talk about base misunderstanding of what you're even photographing.
So I think that
talk about white
way.
Privilege, actually.
Yeah, it's
that's
beautiful.
Amazing.
You know, so we should
that's
like.
Amazing.
I think
wow.
There's this thing like.
I know. We're like what?
So where this goes to a place of filmmaking, right, and directing. So there's the sound stages. Like, I know we've stayed in Peachtree City outside of, like, where they do The Walking Dead and everything. There's all these sound stages and everything. And they've actually, communities have been revitalized over the film industry. Completely revitalized in good ways. But there's a negative ways, too. And I think people get nervous when movie crews come into a town, like a small town, and then a lot of people get excited. So where's the balance?
And
like,
a lot
what
of people get burned.
That? Yeah.
I think that – that's such a big question.
I know.
Big question.
It's like, welcome
it's
to the show.
It's
we were
big
just
because...
supposed to talk about your documentary and your acting, but hello.
Let's take it all the way. As a film community as a whole, the amount of respect that actually really needs to be paid to the land that we shoot on, doesn't matter where, the people that we work with, doesn't matter who, the amount of respect that needs to be shown to every grain of sand and to every single soul that we have the good grace to work with. All of it needs to be respected tremendously more. And it's really easy to lose sight of that. And the film community at large, you know, we had the Me Too movement. We've had a pandemic. We have had the Black Lives Matter movement. We are seeing more representation now across the board, which my God, it's about finally time. We're starting to see some more of that, which is great. And we also need to be really mindful of when we are in small towns. You know, I'm attached to direct a film called Portales. I graduated college in Portales, New Mexico.
New Mexico.
And
really?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
And the last film that shot there, and I'm just going to say it anyway, Hell or High Water, completely screwed over the entire area. They didn't, you know, and I don't think I can probably go into the details of how and why, but there's just a lot of things that were exceptionally mismanaged. And now we're looking at wanting to shoot in Portales because, again, bringing it back full circle, right? Like getting to work with people at the university, John Barr, who's a professor there, New Mexican woman, Tish Miller, wrote it. Her husband's producing it. They hired me to direct it. And so we've got a whole huge, strong New Mexico base, and as well as being able to possibly work with, you know, some of the college students and stuff like that, and really incorporate the town into being a part of the film, and really inspired by it and really excited about it, and having to fight against not the people, the history that happened there with another film that trashed everything and didn't do a lot of the things they said they were going to do. And then here we come, this little independent project going, oh, God, I'm so sorry that happened. We're not jerks, and we're just going to work really hard to prove it to you. And, you know, my history there helps a little bit because I'm still attached to the school in a lot of ways. But it's, you know, when you go into small towns to shoot your big budget film or small budget film, you treat everybody and every place with respect. You don't leave litter. You don't leave your trash. You don't, you know.
You tip your waitress. You tip the people in the hotels. Because, you know, here's the deal. The tourism benefit is huge after the fact of the film coming out. The money that comes in during the filming is big. So, I mean, we know this from communities. I mean, we travel full-time, documenting parks and public lands, and a lot of them are all part of movies and film and destinations. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and we're multi-sided, we're the blend, you know. So there's a lot of stuff. Like we were going to Gallup. It's like, here's this film history, and we have our friend Steve Schneider, our Hollywood historian. He looks it up. He's like, hell, look at all this. Tarzan was filmed here, you know, or this was filmed there. And even it's important that the independent, smaller ones are, and honestly, I really want to say, like, small towns embrace the independence, because it's like that's where you can bridge the gaps of that, of what's happened in the past. We understand this. We're a magazine. We're an independent magazine. Now, think before Google, when we were a print magazine in this country, and I would go into a town, and we're independent. We are not corporately owned. We are a mother-daughter business, and so we sell advertising. Yeah. You have to fund your film. Same thing. You'll go in, and somebody has screwed everybody over in a town, and I'd have to sit there and still go, please buy an ad in our magazine. We're still
and
here.
And it's like, that's not us. You know?
Yeah, it's not us. Just because they did that, that's not us. And why should you trust us? Okay. And as a brand new magazine, why should you trust us? Well, because, you know, we are actually family. We're here. Like, you can call me. You can come to my house and, you know, do whatever. You know, we are, you know, it's just very, it is very hard. In small towns, getting screwed means that they really got screwed because they really don't have that big income. But a movie gives them community pride, really, and also gives them a place on that map, that movie map. New Mexico has a movie map the movie history of New Mexico is major.
They're being really good through tourism.
I believe that the New Mexico Department of Tourism is pretty good about that. I don't want to get into that with you or not, but as far as I know, New Mexico is a good place for making movies. And if you can, in the small towns, there are so many small towns, like, you know, you fill your gas tank, right? And we just recorded an interview before you with artist Victoria Chick in Silver City. We were just laughing about this, saying in New Mexico, you always fill your tank when you're anywhere close to half a tank. You fill it.
Oh,
if you're driving around.
Absolutely.
And you pee. And you go to the bathroom.
Because
you always go to the bathroom.
Don't know how long it's
going to
be.
And there's never really a big tree for you to pee behind on the road. So
not unless you're in the mountains. Yeah.
Right. You need to fill your tank and pee whenever you can.
No,
you just do it.
It actually gets to a point where your body goes, there's a gas station with a restroom. I don't really need to go, but you better.
Your body goes, I'm going. Yeah,
you're going.
Yeah.
It directs the carpet. But these films going into these small towns, it's so huge. It is such a big deal. It really is.
It's a huge deal, and mm-hmm. it needs to be done with a lot of love and respect. Just be kind. Just be kind.
So it's so basic.
Communication. So is that part of what happens now? So Portales is going in. Portales is going in and the communication with the community, right? And talking.
Yeah, it has. It's been the chamber. The folks over at Chamber of Commerce have been. I mean, my God, epic, kind, inviting, warm. We had lovely meetings there with some of the local business owners and things like that. And so, you know, we're working our way and we're, you know, doing funding and all of the things that a film needs to do. We're just getting all the working bits in order. But there's been a lot of love because there's been a lot of one-on-one reach out. And
I'm
really grateful for the gentlemen who've been working in the Chamber of Commerce. They've been very, very kind, very supportive.
That's great. I know there's a film commission in state, but it's really true. Going into the Visitor Bureau and the chambers majority of the time are really good. They know who's ready to work for their town. You know,
right.
They really are. Chambers
right.
of Commerce, you call them like, I want to do this, and they'll go, well, we know so-and-so, you know what I mean? It's like the community central right there at a fingertip.
It really
place.
Is. And honestly, 99% of the time, if a movie is made about your town, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And everybody knows that. Seriously, it's a good thing. It's an opportunity.
It becomes part of history.
And it brings the town revenue in so many ways. It first revenue comes from the people coming in to make the film. Second part of the revenue, which is longevity, is the people who keep coming as tourists, visitors, to go and visit the places that the movie was made.
Right.
Very
right.
Cool.
And then you also have the ability to hire local talent and pay local talent to work on the
awesome.
Film.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You know, in whatever capacity. So it's also the idea of creating, you know, not long-term jobs, obviously, but possible long-term careers for somebody getting their start or coming back or whatever the case may be. And I'm really all about trying to pass opportunity to others in whatever capacity that I can at all be capable of doing. Because I believe in unification. I believe in working together and collaborating and teamwork.
Really.
Isn't that what movies do? They unite. They make you feel.
They're supposed to.
Yes. Yes. What led you to become an actor?
Gosh. When I was six, I was a dancing tree in a play. I think like a Snow White or a Cinderella or like one of those things. And I loved being on stage. And I was like, oh. Yeah. And then, you know, I like did this summer theater a few times. And then when I got to high school, I fell in love with video productions and ditched the idea of acting altogether and started what we would call now creating content in high school in my video productions classes and like learning how to write and create and produce and direct and edit and showcase and all of the things that it takes to make content. Usually it was news stuff or it was music videos and stuff like that. And then I popped into college and did not fall in love with the communications department. And instead, I fell in love with the theater department. I was like, I'll take a beginning acting class and take a makeup, like a theatrical makeup class, just for those easy A electives and just to go have fun. And as soon as I walked in that theater, it was like, oh, my God, I'm home.
That's
and when
awesome.
When I played with a mustache, like putting a mustache on myself in the makeup class, right, with this spirit gum and these little hair things and all the stuff it takes, I was just transfixed with the idea of how quickly you can become somebody else, you know, to really, like, embody a character in these different ways. And oh, man, did I fall in love.
Isn't it a way to travel the world in a way and become different people, different things, like become a master of different jobs, a master of different
identities,
emotions.
Yeah.
You could be a mother one time, not a mother. You could be a, you know, a villain.
Yeah.
Just to feel that, and like you don't have to be in real life, but you're able to really embody it and learn about it. Like you can't embody it without learning about it, right? So you,
right.
you get to go down the rabbit hole for a while and then be it and then
mm-hmm.
go,
yep.
okay, now it's time for a new thing, where most people get stuck in it for 40 years. You know?
Right.
And
you
went,
know, it's
yeah.
Acting is incredibly liberating and it's very inspiring and it's ever – it's just ever shifting, ever changing, and ever challenging, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It is just a wonderfully freeing experience.
I love that you're teaching,
I've had the,
too. You're teaching,
I love
which
teaching.
Is great.
Yeah.
And so are you able, did people have to be where you are? Or are you teaching, like, online?
All levels. Everything is online. I started doing online when my baby, when my little girl was a baby. I moved everything online. And so when the pandemic hit, it was like, okay, well, I'm already doing everything online, so we're good.
It's going to go
And
there,
then I do some live classes in Albuquerque in June. Yeah.
So would you ever play a part like a serial killer or something like that? Would you play that?
Oh, definitely.
Cool.
I mean, goodness, yes.
Yeah.
Because it's fun. It's getting to play and it's, you know,
is there any part you wouldn't play?
It's a really good question. I've played some really hideous
mm-hmm.
characters that I don't agree with at all on any moral ground.
Yeah.
I think now being a parent, being a single mom puts me in a different area brain-wise of
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know.
Ooh.
I don't think I would play a stripper now, mostly because I'm a mom and I'm old. So, you know, like, I don't think I'd do stripper roles anymore.
She's a screamer, though. She's won awards for being a screamer.
Yeah, I've done that. I've definitely done that. I've had a lot of fun doing that. That's a really good question.
But
definitely no strippers.
Isn't it fun, actually, when you think about it, is to be somebody else for a certain amount of time and really get into it? Because if you don't really get into it, you're not really doing your job. It's not convincing
right.
to the audience if you're not really into it. But then, you
right.
know, when they use the term typecast, you know, especially for people
mm-hmm.
who are in TV series, like ones you, you know, been in a TV series, is really hard to go do something else unless you really have the connections and you can really make yourself not be that typecast character.
Mm-hmm.
Because it tends
mm-hmm.
to, like, if you're a detective, okay, now you can be a detective in a movie, but you're still a detective. What if you want
to be...
You're
still the detective.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because I'm like... One of the things we watch, oh gosh, Lisa, you'll know the name of it. Martin Sheen and the other guy, Sam.
Oh, you're talking about the Frankie and Gracie thingy.
Yeah, where the two guys, if you look at Martin Sheen's career and Sam Waterston's career, Sam Waterston was like this big detective, and then he was a lawyer and a prosecutor. Now
he's a lawyer
in
that too.
Yeah,
happy,
and now he's
a retired gay man who's very, they're both very flamboyant from being hardcore.
It's totally opposite to anything they've ever done.
But it's
and it's extreme. Magical.
But it's extreme. So I think they go from one extreme to the other, which is similar.
But the talent it takes to be that convincing after years of being typecast a certain kind of character, I have
mm-hmm.
to hand it to him. I think it's a, that just shows the dedication to true acting.
I agree.
I like
and
it.
To storytelling.
Yeah.
You're telling a story. And when you
mm-hmm.
get locked into people only seeing you one specific way, I mean, that did happen
yeah.
to me for a while and it was very, it's great and beneficial, but it's also a little frustrating. Mm. You know, when you're locked into just one thing.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, your job is to tell a story. And yeah. at the end of the day, you have an essence about you where people will generally buy you only a specific way until you kind of otherwise prove that you can be more than what people think, because and it boils down to your essence a lot of the times. Like, you know, I'm pretty edgy. I have tattoos and blah, blah, blah. And mm-hmm. I might cuss a lot and things. And
cool.
You know, but I'm a single parent. I've been a soccer coach for my daughter's soccer team. Like I'm a vegan, I'm crunchy, you know, all
these things
are very organic
yeah. mm-hmm.
and very snooty, right? In a lot of ways.
But soccer,
if you were to just look,
give shout out for soccer because I was a soccer girl. Like,
thank you.
Hell yes.
Oh.
And come on, girls.
Yeah.
America.
It's important.
Here, I mean, watching the American girls getting out there. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. I'm back.
Yes. No, it's important. You know. But if you were to look at me, just in general, I wear a lot of black. I'm covered in tattoos. I'm a little edgy. Blah blah. You might not cast me in a movie or TV show where my character is a mom who drives her 12 children to soccer practice on Tuesdays and cuts all the oranges and makes the little snacks and the paper bag lunches and all of that and wears her hair in a ponytail and wears cardigans, right? Like, the chances of you booking me in that role would be very, very slim
mm-hmm.
because of my essence, because of how I come off, because of how what my energy says about
mm-hmm.
me. And in the truth of life, I mean, my God, like I said, I coached Hope's soccer team. So it's a different thing. So, you know, it is also partially essence. And when you say that these actors have gone from like one extreme thing to this other extreme thing,
mm-hmm.
what we're picking up on is the ability to play really strongly directive characters.
Mm-hmm.
Really strong with this point of view, really strong with that point of view.
They're very
yeah.
extreme. You
so
go from one
they're
to
different,
this.
But it's a pendulum swing.
Yeah.
yeah.
It's a complete pendulum swing. It's not chilling somewhere in the middle. Not to say
yeah.
they're incapable, because my God, they are. But, you know, it's what people respond to as far as artists and essence when it comes to acting.
Yeah. Because they're believable in either role. They're totally 100%
right.
believable, but now they're playing the opposite, which to me is, if you're an actor, then to play the opposite of everything you've ever played would be a goal.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Like, I'll play a Hallmark mom yet.
Oh, my
no.
God.
No.
Well,
you
should.
Think?
They would be like, she's a rock and roller who just
yeah,
moved into
how
town.
How about like a Buck at the
general store looks her up and goes, ooh, there's something new in town, and she's wearing a leather jacket. Ooh,
no.
But then she's got a small heart. She's got a single. She's a single
no,
mom with a daughter. Here it comes. Here we go.
No.
I could write the story right now.
Here. The Hallmark mom who's having an affair
with
her.
Oh, and then
her,
wait, Christmas.
No,
comes.
You could. Let me. Here's a Hallmark
Sorry.
Mom having an affair with her best friend's husband, and then she kills
Ooh.
Him.
No, you can't do that on Hallmark.
That's my
You're not
kind
allowed.
Of. That's, oh, that's right.
You're
yeah,
not
you can't
do
that
on Hallmark.
You can't shank anybody, but that would
no.
definitely be my type of character.
Yeah, it's like, hello, you want to come on a boat ride with me? I'm going to stab you, but, you know.
Yes.
No.
Boat
okay, but
of death.
I know this is such a good conversation. We went from vegan to stabbing people. It's great.
It's good.
Wanna,
Happy
now,
Monday.
If you, one of your favorite movies of all time, what is it, and what character would you like to have played in it?
God.
I know. I suck.
Let's see. Well, I mean, I love a good action flick, to be really honest with you, and I really love Expendables 2, and I don't know that I would want to be in Expendables 2. I just love Expendables 2 and the heart of it. So what character? But, you know, Tomb Raider. There we go.
Oh.
Mm.
You know, because it's fun. I love action. I love watching action. I love watching women overcome ridiculous
situations that are stacked against them.
Okay, then what about Gone with the Wind?
Yeah, there you go.
Gone with the Wind.
Hard pass. Hard pass.
Now, come
hard
on.
Pass.
Would you, Gone with the Wind, would you want to be, oh, God, what were their names?
I just see Carol Burnett
with Gone
the
Gone with the Wind. I've never seen the whole movie.
Oh,
I
no,
think my mom or somebody tried to get me to watch it when I was a kid, and I wasn't having it.
No, I wasn't having it.
It's crazy.
No, but have you watched Carol Burnett do the takes of Gone with the Wind? Like when she comes out with the curtains on her shoulder?
Oh, funny.
Like that's
no,
funny.
Funny.
But,
no.
No.
No,
oh,
it's
not a thing.
The Scarlet.
Miss Scarlet.
The floozy.
Okay, but Tomb Raider. Yeah. She's into Tomb Raider. Yeah.
It really, you know, for the fun of it and for all of those good things, you know.
So would you, okay, so that leads me to this. Would you want to act in what would become a video game from a movie? Would you want
Ooh.
To be like the actor that they...
Yeah, I think that would be a lot of fun, actually. I mean, there's a different pressure there, right, because there's... If it's a video game being made into a movie, there's a very specific fan base that they're going to expect really specific things from the production, not just from you, the actor, but from the production as a whole. So, I mean, it's definitely a different type of, you know, pressure and stress maybe, I guess, around it. But I do think it would be an awful lot of fun.
It'd be interesting.
Now, I know you love music, so I want to know, like, your ultimate band you're going to go perform with. Who would it be? You're going to just go
Anita
jump?
Franco.
Oh, very cool.
Anita Franco. Yeah. Now, I do love a lot of hard rock and roll. Don't get me wrong. I love everything. I listen to music. I listen to all kinds of music. And
cool.
I'm raising my daughter listening to all kinds of music.
Good
from,
for you.
You know,
love that.
A little bit of...
Yeah.
Piano-y type of things to Native American flute music, like I grew up listening to at home, to Motley Crue, to, you know, The Who, and I don't mean the WHO, The Who is a HU, they're a Mongolian throat singing band.
I'm
so, you know, we
that.
Listen
no,
to everything.
Now, what about
they're
the guy
so
that
good.
Was from, he went to Mongolia. There's a documentary. He went to Mongolia. He's from the band. Oh, God. Big old jet rider. Come on. What is the band's name? I never remember their band name, which is stupid. But they're, like, famous, you know. Big old jet rider. Da, 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 da. Anyway.
Oh,
he's
Steve
like,
Miller Band?
Yes, thank you. He,
good
guy,
one.
He's,
you're welcome.
He's passed now. Thank you. You get 10 points.
Yeah,
he passed away now.
Good save.
But he was blind. Very good. Thank you. He was blind, and thank you for saving me on this, because this guy is what? He's more of a blues guy, right, in the band. And he went to Mongolia to study Tuvan throat singing, and I drove Nancy nuts for like a few weeks.
Oh, God.
I got all stuck in this.
You've
got to watch this documentary. And then he ended up performing with their big thing every year, kind of like the Gathering of Nations, right? But this is like the gathering of Tuvan throat singers from, like, Mongolia. And he went up and performed blues for them and learned to do it through Tuvan throat singing. You've got to watch that documentary.
Oh,
I have to find
my
it.
God. I do. I do.
I freaked out. And
but
this
Ani...
was about 10, 15 years ago I watched it, yeah.
Oh, this is not new at all. Oh, I
know.
Definitely have to watch it. I will track that down. That
no,
sounds really amazing, actually.
He was alive, and then he died. I think he died. In the, like, he died. But he died. But what he did was so amazing. And what he got into the culture of the people doing this throat singing, because it's very Aboriginal. Like, when you think about a didgeridoo, you're doing that circular.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's
yes.
insanely cool. Yes. So, and you've got it. I'm going to find it now. It's going to start all over again, Nancy. Because once I get into it, it's really cool.
No.
And
hand it on over. Yeah, that's awesome.
Like, I am so into it because we can do so much with the power of our voice as singers. It's like, dude,
yeah.
It's insane.
The original
we
voice.
Can create a
it
tornado
is.
In our own chest cavity and throat cavity. Like, you can do it. And it goes into your diaphragm and you can get crazy weird, you know?
And it can, cool. You know, music, to me, music, I'm surprised I didn't grow up and become some kind of musician, because I really do just love listening to music all the time. I love it so much. I love it to help my mood, to assist mm-hmm. my mood, to take me to a different time and play, like whatever the things are. And Ani DiFranco, for me, like, she represents like pure, beautiful, brilliant, badass. Like, she couldn't get signed.
You just said it. She's pure badassery. Yeah.
She started her own record label, you know, because she was, I think she was like 19 or 20. She started Righteous Babe Records because she couldn't get signed at the time. So she's like, screw this. I'm just going to, I'll do it myself. Yeah. I got this, guys.
There you go.
You men who aren't going to sign me, you men who are saying no to me, I will just do this myself. Mm-hmm. And her music, especially her earlier music, was like Not a Pretty Girl. Oh, it's my anthem. I love that song. It takes me to my bones every time.
Yeah. I love it.
So I think I saw her in concert once, and it was amazing.
I've not seen amazing, and I would love to. And the thing is,
so good.
Doing your own album label now, I think it's imperative that all artists do, in a way, do their own thing in because it's the only way to have the integrity of your craft at times, especially as musicians.
Yeah, it's also like, the only way you get any money.
Also super hard to promote everything and advertise it and rise above. Like, it's great that we have the internet, but then it sucks because really streaming doesn't pay. You know what I mean? It's like it's a hard, wild world. But I'm going to close this with a song called Fiction Theater. And I have to because it's acting, but... You said that you won't play a stripper. Well, the song is about a stripper.
Oh, my God. That's brilliant.
Actually,
that's
so funny. A hooker. Mm. It's written by Michael.
Wonderful.
Healy. Well, Michael and Spider had this band called Red Wedding, and it's one of the top, the very first punk glam rock band in the late 70s out in L.A. And even like Jane, they opened for Jane's Addiction, who stole some of their music. I didn't say that.
Oh, dude.
Oh my God! No.
Yeah. So this is from their album Red Wedding. Sadly, Spider has passed, but he's one of the most brilliant. Guitarists on the planet.
Yeah.
Taught a lot of the greats that we hear today, and Michael has still gone on and done some music. And but anyway, Michael and Spider, he was on our show years ago, and they always said, when you come to Tucson, you got to go have margaritas with us at this tiki lounge. And then we called them and said, we've moved to Tucson. We're here. So we had dinner with them, and we've been best friends ever since. They did the music for our show, the intro. Anyway, so when I was like, you're coming on the show, we got to play Fiction Theater. So it's one of my most favorite songs on the planet. So here it is, Fiction Theater. But everyone, keep up with Michelle. Go to her website. It's michelletomlinson.net. And that's Michelle, T-O-M-L-I-N-C-O-N-S-O-N. Tomlinson. In other words, there's no H in there. michelletomlinson.net. Go keep up with her on Instagram. You're on Instagram and Facebook, right? Those are the main places. And IMDb, whatever that thingy is. Go there, the film place. Her resume's there. Go watch the trailer for Edge. Please go do that. And
it's awesome.
Please keep us posted when it comes out. Please come back when it comes out. Okay?
Thank you.
Please do.
I certainly will. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And everyone, keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Thank you for joining us. We love you, listeners. And here it is, Fiction Theater. Thank you, Michelle. You take care.
Thank you, girls.